Welcome to Ed Show, episode 95. I'm Simon Perryman.
David Tessar.
Oh, you beat me to the punch.
That's right. I got to mix it up a little bit with you.
Well, we have a lot of news today. There's actually been a lot of exciting announcements, and we're going to start off by SQL Server 2014. It has now been released to manufacturing, RTM, and it's going to be generally available to the public in just a few weeks on April 1st. Now, this is a major release in that it has a lot of in-memory performance enhancements. They're estimating 10 to 30 times per faster OLAP performance here. So this is kind of one of the real key things that a lot of our customers are excited about. But in any case, go check out the blog. That will give you all of the details of what's coming up within this release. But that's not all with SQL. We've actually just released a jumpstart made available on demand on the Microsoft Virtual Academy for SQL Server running in Windows Azure. So this is a replay of one of our live training events, which kind of gives you all the details of how you go deploy, manage, and optimize SQL Server while it's running up in a Windows Azure instance.
Which would be separate than SQL Azure, because SQL Azure is a whole nother deal. But but wait, there's more. What else do we have today?
Well, tell me about migration coming up.
So for those of you who have been living under a rock maybe for a while, I don't know, the XP does have end of life of April 14th. So that is coming up in, let's see the counter. As of right now, as of the recording, it's 20 days now. It's going to be less than that by the time you're actually hearing this message. So hopefully you've already gotten on top of that and you have already have plans, if not you're in process of migrating to Windows 7 or 8.1. There are some resources to help you out with this. Some quick tips on that. One of the sites, if you want to snap to, is called modern.ie. And this one's really good, you know, for those of you who are double old in that you have XP and you're still on IE6. you know, this site really helps you to modernize any old apps that you may have that still use IE6. So it helps you out with compatibility and migrating those web applications forward. Of course, you can run, you know, a old, newer version of IE on Windows XP, but this site will really help you out with that migration. Additionally, what we have is a MVA course on how to migrate from Windows XP over to Windows 7. So for those of you who just, for whatever the reason, you're adverse to anything newer than Windows 7, you know, this is a course to help you kind of to walk through. And for those of you who also want to just take and embrace the new Windows 8.1 goodness that's out there, there is another course on migrating from XP over to Windows 8.1.
Great.
So lots of resources for you. Shouldn't have any real excuses to not move forward. There's a number of concerns. You know, if you look at that initial countdown page and scroll to the bottom there, there's a number of reasons why you really need to move off. It's not more than security, you know, for your organization to kind of keep going, right?
Awesome.
Yeah.
And those are, of course, on the Microsoft Virtual Academy, along with this course, What's New in Windows 8.1 for IT Professionals. So this is really looking about how Windows 8.1 could be successfully used in an enterprise. So not just things like, you know, how do I go and resize the apps, but how do I go connect my apps to different enterprise services, remote desktops. So some of these, you know, are highly desired scenarios to make sure that your end users get to use 8.1 and you still get to manage everything securely.
Yep. Lots of new things on 8.1 from an end user usability standpoint and for IT's pros managing them. So you definitely want to take a look at that if you are in the midst of migrating and considering moving to a new operating system.
Great. Well, next we also want to let you guys know that OneNote has recently announced support on a lot of different things, most importantly, Mac. So a lot of people use OneNote as kind of a single shared note-taking collaboration document. Our team actually uses it quite a lot so we could share information across all of our evangelists worldwide. So as we're developing new ideas, working on new content, we have a single centralized location, everybody gets the updates, and so we eliminate any problems with version control, version management. And now we have support not just on Mac, but on quite a lot of other devices as well. Windows Phone, tablet, PC, iPad, iPhone, Android Phone, and of course the web. So now's a great opportunity to take advantage of OneNote, even if your customers are using Mac.
Right, yep, and that, you know, you can synchronize all up to the cloud as well. You know, you use your OneDrive and synchronize notes there, or if you have, you know, SharePoint in Office 365, that's another great place to kind of store your OneNotes to collaborate across a number of different folks, right? And then because there is the web browser version, right, that kind of helps you out with every other, anybody's got a web browser, right, you're good to go. So, yeah,
nice.
Good stuff.
And now what's coming out with devices and Surface, right?
Yeah, Surface coming out. And also, you know, what about the PowerShell, writing a PowerShell export for
Well, this is a teaser. So if we are looking for people out there, if anyone's interested, they want to help us do some output via PowerShell to OneNote, love to see some guys work on a module to develop that. Help us go and programmatically go push things out to OneNote as well.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Let's so the last but not least here, right, I believe, is the Surface 2 announcement. Of course, Surface 2 has been out for quite a while, but as a very common ask from a lot of people that, hey, I want to use this with my mobile carrier, right? Well, now we have a LTE capable version via our AT&T service out here in the US anyway, enabling you to pop in a SIM card to your Surface 2 and get internet access through your mobile carrier. So it's a pretty big deal for those folks that are out there that want to be highly mobile. And of course, just a reminder too, Surface 2 includes 200 gigs of OneDrive storage space. And then it also includes unlimited minutes for 1 year on Skype, even to LAN calls. So you get a lot of additional kind of services bundled in there when you buy a Surface 2. It's kind of cool stuff.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps up the news today. As you've seen, lots of information. We're going to be posting all of our links right down at the bottom of this page. Over to the interview. Welcome back. I'm joined today by Eamon, and we're going to be talking about one of the new features and functionalities that's come out in the Windows Azure Pack, known as SMA. But first of all, Eamon, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, Simon. My name's Eamon O'Reilly. I'm a lead program manager on the orchestrator team inside of System Center. And I work mostly on automation and enabling customers to perform all their integration automation inside of their data center.
Great. So within a data center, why is automation important?
Yeah, so what we notice really with customers is that they have a lot of systems inside of their environments. And what they're really looking for is a way to tie in all these systems together so they can deliver end-to-end processes on demand for their end users. And so what we've done really with automation is enable them to hook everything together and then offer those services out to their end users in an automated, on-demand way. And that's really what automation is about, is trying to get rid of all those mundane day-to-day tasks, remove the manual effort, so that they can really focus on enabling the business to even do more.
Nice. I think another important benefit as well is just eliminating human error, right?
Yes.
You know, oftentimes if you're following like a 50-step, you know, instruction guide, you accidentally mess up one thing, trouble down the line.
It is. I mean, the big thing about automation, especially when you get to any kind of scale that we see our customers, is, you know, once you start doing manual tasks, error starts to, you know, creep in. You may not even notice you've made a change or someone has made a modification in a virtual machine. And once you get to hundreds of thousands of machines, you really can't afford to do anything manually. You have to really automate everything. And that's where the power kind of orchestrator and the Microsoft automation platform comes in.
Nice, nice. So Microsoft, it seems like we have a couple of different automation solutions. What are they, briefly?
Yeah, so we basically have, you know, two main solutions, especially for target towards the IT professional. And the first one that's been around the longest is the PowerShell. Mm-hmm. And so PowerShell has been there for a lot of years, and customers bet on that heavily to kind of automate all their different tasks inside of their data center. Whereas, you know, we had Orchestrator come out with 2012 in System Center. And what that gives you is the ability to really visualize all of your automation and describe it in a visual way that then you could automate. And so those are the kind of the two main automation platforms we've had inside of Microsoft. We've had the PowerShell and then PowerShell Workflow that came out on top of that in 2012. And then we had Orchestrator inside of System Center and all of its capabilities to integrate and automate processes.
Right. So SMA is next. Quickly, can you just define SMA for us?
Yeah, so SMA is Service Management Automation. And it ships as part of Orchestrator inside of System Center 2012 R2. And it's a feature of Orchestrator, but really what it's about is it enables customers, as they adopt the Windows Azure Pack, to actually bring automation to the Windows Azure Pack. Because what we wanted to be able to do was, as customers start to bring all these new services from Azure down on-premise, We want them to be able to integrate into their existing systems as well as automate all of their services. So we didn't want to just give them a bunch of stuff that they couldn't really integrate and automate. So service management automation was built just for that task.
Ah, great point. And we actually covered Windows Azure Pack a few weeks ago on the Edge show, but could you just kind of give a quick summary of what is Windows Azure Pack all up?
Yeah, so Windows Azure Pack is really a set of services that are based on Azure services that we've been building over the last few years. And what we want to do is give those to customers so they could actually deliver those to their end users on premise. And so these could be large service providers or big customers who want to act like service providers and offer out these Azure type services to their end users so they can consume them in a very similar way that you would in Azure.
Nice. And is this the interface that we're seeing like in the background here? What exactly are we looking at here?
Yeah, so I have here on my demo basically is the admin portal. So you'll notice in the left-hand corner that none of this is running on Azure. This is running on my own machine, so I have a machine called amino-wap, contoso.com. And so what you're seeing here is the admin portal that gives you the ability to offer out these services to your end users. And then the end users can hit the tenant portal of that and be able to consume these services as they like. And so there's no direct dependency on Azure. You bring all those services and you deploy and manage those inside your own data center.
Nice. Yet it does take advantage, or like it's a similar code base to Azure, right? So we kind of build these best practices, this great service up in the cloud. And we had customers say, I need this on-premise, I'm isolated environment. And it is kind of the same code base, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the real benefit of going towards the Azure Pack is that, you know, a lot of the code that was written to deliver these services inside of Azure is now being brought down. And the nice thing, not just the code base, but all of the interfaces are very consistent.
Similar experience, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So the experience is the same, but even the developer experience. So if you actually want to go directly against the APIs or use the PowerShell commandlets, as your end users develop applications, they could then actually point and up to Azure, and those applications will continue to work because of the consistency between the APIs, between the Azure services and the Windows Azure Pack services. And so that's one of the goals around consistency we've had with the Windows Azure Pack.
Nice. Now, is the WAP, the Windows Azure Pack, required for us to use SMA?
So it's not required. So how you get SMA is through System Center. And so as you launch up the orchestrator setup, there's two features underneath that which allows you to install SMA. And then once you have that as part of System Center, what you want to do then, if you want to get the user interface, so you want to get the portal experience so you can actually manage it, that's where the Windows Azure Pack comes down. And so you just download the Windows Azure Pack and you just point to the service that you just stood up inside of System Center, and then everything lights up in the UI, which I'll show you later.
Oh, nice, nice. So you mentioned a little earlier about a PowerShell workflow. Is a workflow different than traditional PowerShell? What exactly does the workflow piece mean?
Yeah, so you know, one of the things the PowerShell team and Microsoft in general, you know, have seen, PowerShell is a very flexible, very powerful language. But you know, one of the drawbacks is if you really want resiliency and you want to be able to checkpoint, you know, your scripts halfway through, it's kind of difficult with PowerShell. Mm-hmm. And so with PowerShell workflow, it gives you the ability to actually make your scripts very robust. And so it has this checkpoint functionality. So as you've committed a task that you wouldn't want to redo if the script had to restart, you can checkpoint it. And the nice thing about that, if your script failed or crashed, the PowerShell workflow then has the ability to start from your last checkpoint and continue on with your tasks. And so that's kind of a core resiliency that's built into PowerShell workflow. And then it also has a lot of other capabilities like doing parallelism, you know, sequential tasks, those things that really are a little difficult inside of core PowerShell. PowerShell workflow kind of opens up that experience for kind of larger level management.
Okay, nice. Well, we talked about System Center Orchestrator. Now we've talked about SMA. When would you use one versus when would you use the other?
Yeah, that's a great question, Simon. We get asked that a lot because we've seen a lot of customers have been building, you know, a ton of workflows and a ton of runbooks using Orchestrator. And so they really invested in kind of automating all of their data center. And so we do get asked, you know, oh, I have all this investment in Orchestrator and, you know, service management automation, you know, what is that about? And so the nice thing about that is, you know, use service management automation for the Azure Pack and kind of managing all the new services we're delivering. Use Orchestrator for all your traditional data center automation you've been doing for the last few years. And the really nice thing about these two, and we spent a lot of time in trying to get this right, was it's easy to actually talk between these two systems. So they both have PowerShell modules. So inside of service management automation, we can call runbooks that exist inside of the graphical authoring of Orchestrator. And similarly, that graphical orchestrator can call back into SMA to perform tasks.
So they are independent. You can use both at the same time then.
Exactly.
And that's how they connect to each other.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of customers doing that because, you know, they may have some nice integration packs that came with Orchestrator for some, maybe some third-party systems that there isn't an easy module available. Mm-hmm. And so they can leverage all the work they've done inside of Orchestrator. But then as they build new stuff that kind of lights up a lot of the Windows Azure Pack services, they can kind of call back and forth and complete those end-to-end processes.
Nice. So within Orchestrator, you know, I guess a lot of our viewers are more familiar with that. We have this concept of an integration pack, right?
Yep.
That's this little component you add on. It exposes you to go and perform a task. Deploy to AWS, deploy to VMware. What's kind of the equivalent that we have for an integration pack within an SMA?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, when Orchestrator, we have this integration pack, which is really a lot of the power of Orchestrator, because the first thing you have to do is integrate into systems. Mm-hmm. You can't really automate if you can't integrate. And so that's really what the integration packs enable inside of Orchestrator. But the real power of moving towards SMA is because we're built on top of PowerShell and PowerShell workflow, all modules that are out there, you know, Microsoft ships a bunch of PowerShell modules for all of their server products. You know, SharePoint has these, all the System Center products, the Windows, Exchange. So all of those are basically equivalent to what an integration pack is. You want to be able to manage those systems. And so the nice thing is you can just import those modules directly from those different systems into SMA, and now you can orchestrate and manage those systems using PowerShell and PowerShell modules.
Very nice. Now, could you maybe give us a quick demo, walk us through a little bit of what this looks like?
Yeah, so let me just switch over here, and hopefully you can see the demo. All right, so you know, we talked earlier around the Windows Azure Pack and the set of services we bring down in Azure and make available on-premise. So what I'm looking at here is the Service Admin Portal. You know, and so on the left-hand side are all those services I talked about that you now have available on-premise and that you can offer out to your end users. You know, so there's a whole list of these that are on the left-hand side. And then what you do is you actually configure all these services for the ones you need. You don't have to use the ones you want. And then you make these available to your end users so they can consume them. And so I've made a couple available, like I have made VMs and SQL. You can see these are configured.
Now let me jump back in with a quick question. Who is kind of an end user in this case? Who in the organization would be this end user?
Yeah, so you know, the user really here is the service administrator. So these are the people who are responsible for making sure that these Azure services that they're making available on-premise actually are working and functioning as expected.
Okay.
You know, so when you lay out all your websites or your virtual machine clouds, you know, this person now, you can configure them and make sure that they're working so that your end users who consume these are actually happy.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of the service admin portal. I'll come back here in a second and kind of focus on the automation part because this is where service management automation shows up. But let me just switch over to show you the experience from the tenant side.
Mm-hmm.
So you're an end user. You know, all these services and plans have been offered out to you, and now you want to consume them just like you would if you went to a public cloud like Azure, and you just want to get on-demand services. And so, you know, I've kind of subscribed to a couple here. I want virtual machines, and I want to get SQL databases. And so this will allow me to basically do my development independent of IT. So IT have offered these services, and then I, as a developer, can go ahead and do everything I need and not have to really go through IT to get my capabilities. And so that's the idea behind this. And so if I click on virtual machines, you can see I have a VM that's created. And then similarly, if I went to SQL databases, you can see I can create databases here. And these are limits that can be placed by the IT department on how many you can create and everything else. But it gives that end user, that developer, the flexibility to just get what they need on demand.
So let me ask another question here. Who do you kind of see as this example tenant? You mentioned light developer. Like, what would be some other examples of people that would consume these services?
Yeah, so it's really anybody who needs, you know, kind of resources like virtual machines. So if you were, you know, trying to stand up a SharePoint farm,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you want to be able to build up your SharePoint farm and actually use it for your own department, you could actually just go in here and say, okay, I need 4 or 5 VMs, because that's what it takes, and I need, you know, my SQL Server database. You can just consume all these resources directly from the service provider, and then you're in charge. You can configure them, do exactly what you need, and you don't have to go through all the additional processes you might have had in the past.
Nice, okay.
Yeah, so it kind of meets a whole set of customers who kind of just need resources on demand and don't want to go through all the different steps you might have to do.
Makes sense.
So what I'll do here is I'm actually going to go ahead and just create a VM because this ties into the automation in a second. So if I go and create a standalone virtual machine, you can pick one from the gallery. So here I'll just pick, you can, I can pick a disk or just a Windows Server 2012. And then I'll just give it a quick name, let's say maybe Finance 2.
do the password. And as you guys will probably notice here, the interface pretty much identical to what you see with Azure. So that's kind of one of these key design goals here, that consistent experience. You know, you already have internal customers using Azure. Being able to move to this Windows Azure Pack experience, very little overhead, very little additional training.
Exactly. So the experience is almost identical to what you would see inside. And you know, it's very simple. So that was kind of a nice experience where you can just go ahead and create this new VM. So I didn't have to ask any resources. I just went in and said, oh, I need an extra VM for my finance department. Let me just go in and create one.
And we're really hiding all the under the covers, right? They don't need to think about what networks it's connecting. Well, I guess they do their virtual network, but they don't have to configure the networking, configure the VMs, access the host, think about high availability, right?
Exactly.
Although that's kind of covered in the plumbing already.
It is. And so that's really the job of that service admin. You know, that's their responsibility to make sure what they're offering out meets the needs of their end users without getting in the way.
Right.
But the nice thing, when I go back to automation here, I'm going to switch over now to the service management automation and kind of show you some of that work that's been done in the background. So one of the nice things about automation we talked about is you can kind of automate all of your tasks inside of your data center. But what we've seen a lot of customers require is they also want policy to be enforced. So they want those end users to kind of consume resources as they want, but a lot of them have policy maybe around licensing that they have to enforce, or backup strategy, or you know, configuration management, database integration. There's a lot of policies organizations have. So when these VMs get created, or these SQL databases, they can actually go back, make sure they're compliant, recover them as needed. So they want to kind of give that capability to the end user so they can consume them, but also enforce a policy. And so one thing we've done inside of automation is anytime you create one of those resources from the end user standpoint, you can actually hook automation into the creation of that virtual machine. And so let me walk you through kind of how that works,
right.
And then I'll show you kind of what kind of policy you might want to enforce as those end users are consuming resources, maybe put lease time on these, other things you might need to actually light up all of your organization's business processes, but to give the end user what they want. So one way to do that, I'll just jump into VM Clouds here real quick, just to show you. So if you click in this automation tab, so I'm in this VM Clouds, and this you've probably seen in other broadcasts around, you know, how to set up virtual machines and everything else. But let me walk into the automation. And so what I've done here is I've basically said anytime a virtual machine gets created, I actually want to call a runbook called wait on VM job. And so anytime an end user creates one, I'm going to kick off my runbook, which is the automation that's going to kick in and do some processing for them. And you could add more just by adding additional ones inside of here. And so all the different things like, you know, maybe a user subscribes to a new plan or they delete something, you know, everything that's available to kind of the end user, you can map to a runbook and then have the runbook do whatever you need to on top of that command. Okay, so that's all you had to do. It was a very simple, just connect these calls to a runbook, and then I'll show you what the runbook can actually do for you. So if you notice there that this wait VM job actually got kicked off already. So you can see it just got kicked off because it's been hooked and I didn't have to do anything. So this is the nice thing about automation is you don't want to have to do manual automation. You want the automation just to react to things that happen inside of your environment. And so here you can see the wait VM runbook got called and there's a job for it. And so I can click into the job.
Now, in this particular example, you know, we saw this runbook be invoked based on a manual step, right? You actually went into the UI to do that. Can you kick off SMA runbooks by schedule, by other actions in the environment, such as an operations manager alert?
Exactly. So, I mean, that's what we see most customers today using Orchestrator for, and it's very similar inside of SMA. The idea behind it is you want an external event to happen, and then you want your automation to react to that. You know, so one event that happened here was, you know, an end user created a virtual machine, so I'm going to go off and do work for them. Another one is maybe an alert happens inside of Operations Manager, and based on that alert, I want to go do some remediation, collect some more logs, escalate into a third-party ticketing system, you know, depending on what your policy and your processes are inside your organization.
Sure.
But you don't see a lot of manual automation, although that can be useful for specific tasks. Most of it is driven based on events that might happen either by an end user or inside of your organization.
Sure.
So I'm not going to go through all of this one here, but I'll just show you what's happening in the back end. So you can see here what it's doing is we're creating that virtual machine inside of Virtual Machine Manager against that cloud. And what I'm doing here is I'm just polling for the completion. And when that VM is completed, what it's going to do then is actually going to back it up. And then it will go ahead and install the Operations Manager agent on side of that, so it can be monitored.
Nice.
And so there's a whole set of processes. You could do more on top of that, depending on what you need inside your organization. But the idea is very similar. You know, you once something happens, let's apply some policy on top of it.
Now could one SMA workflow call another one? Can you create kind of dependencies and be pretty granular in how you construct them?
Yeah, so that's kind of a best practice. We've seen a lot of our customers do that as well. Is we encourage this kind of modular design of our runbooks. So they are reusable. And so the idea is, you know, once you've kind of got a set of tasks, maybe there's a task that says, you know, I just want to back up a VM. Mm-hmm. And so then you would create a runbook just for that. And then there might be lots of scenarios where you want to be able to go back up. And so you can just call into that runbook and actually do the task.
Nice.
And so if you kind of keep your runbooks relatively small, even in PowerShell, that's kind of a best practice just for reusability and just debugging and everything else. Okay, so this one usually takes about 20 minutes. I'm going to go back and show you one that I kind of had earlier, just so you can see the process and how it works, and how the runbooks, just like you called out, Simon, you know, have this layering approach. So I'm going to go back, and you saw the wait VM. And so that was the dashboard I showed you a second ago, which kind of gives you an overview of everything inside your system. So if there are jobs failing or in suspended, you can quickly zero in and actually go and solve those. Or just use a management pack inside of Operations Manager is another way to kind of see what's happening inside of SMA. But what I've done here is clicked over on the runbooks, and you can see this one's running, and there's a bunch of other runbooks I have in my system that I've been using just to try out different scenarios. But I can quickly find the ones that I just had for today. So if I just type in, I'm just sort of typing in Chan, because what I'm looking for are channel 9. Mm-hmm. And so you can see here, we have tags. And the idea behind tags is that, you know, it allows you to categorize runbooks that might be similar. So if you have a larger process and you've built 5 or 10 runbooks to enable that, you can tag them with the name of that process. And then now, if you just want to work on those, you can quickly type it in and just find out which ones you want to work on. So that's the benefit of doing that. And so this one's still running. And you can see there's the disabled firewall. And there's the install System Center Operations Manager agent that I've built so far inside of here. So these are all the ones that I currently have working when a new VM gets created. So I'll just walk you through and show you kind of what's happening.
Now, how easy is it to just go and add another one to the end of a process like that, such as enable firewall?
Exactly. I'll show you. So once you get into authoring experience, you can actually go and insert additional runbooks and just go and solve more tasks, you know, by just layering on the more and more runbooks.
Right.
So I've drilled into this wait VM. So you can see here's the dashboard of the ones I've done before. But I'm going to click over to the authoring experience just so you get a feel, because SMA is built on top of PowerShell and PowerShell workflow. And so your authoring experience is in PowerShell. And so the real benefit of that is most of our customers are very familiar with PowerShell, even the customers who use Orchestrator inside of the visual authoring experience, whereas now they can bring all that skill set over. They don't have to relearn a brand new tool. All the PowerShell work they've done, they can just use inside of SMA.
Nice.
Okay, so I'm going to click over to the draft, and this allows you to work on side on the runbook. So it's doing a very simple thing here, taking in a few parameters, and then at the end, what it's going to do is it's going to go and call install SCOM. So that was the name of the runbook I had. And I'm just going to call it and give the computer name that I got from the VM. So there's all standard PowerShell inside of here. And then I can quickly go and call another one. I mean, to your point earlier, if you wanted to actually go and install others, you could just go insert runbook. And then what it'll do is it'll enumerate all the different runbooks in the system. And then you can just select the one you want. So, you know, I have a few here. You know, maybe there's ones I use for like get the IP. You know, it might be a standard thing you want to see, does it have the right IP? And if not, we go and configure it. And so if I did, I could just go and select it. It would tell me the parameters required. And then I could just go and insert it directly inside of here. And so what this has done now is when this runbook runs, it will actually go and call the get IP runbook, and it'll get back the IP of that machine. And you could do it for lots of different scenarios.
Nice.
Okay, so that kind of is a very simple way of calling it. I'm going to switch back and show you the Operations Manager just to kind of show you how runbooks can call runbooks. So this one's calling one runbook. I'll leave this page. I won't save my draft. The nice thing about with SMA is you can have a published runbook and a draft runbook. So this allows you to work on your draft for a few days, make sure it's all good, and it doesn't affect your published one. It'll just continue running the whole time.
Nice.
Okay, so let me go back and just show you the Operations Manager Manager one. Oops. I'll quickly find it here. Okay, so this is the install SCOM agent. And in a very similar way, all these work the same way. You just go in, you do your authoring capabilities. As you mentioned earlier, you could schedule these if you wanted to. But I'll just quickly go into the draft. And what I'm doing here is what I don't advise customers to do, but I'm actually just going ahead and disabling the firewall. You know, one of the things Operations Manager has, you have to have the right ports open mm-hmm. in order to install the agent. So I wrote a little runbook that just goes and disables the firewall, and then I can enable it afterwards. But ideally, what I call out here in the comments, these are the set of ports that I could have done as well. And just if I enable just those right ports, then I can get the agent installed as well. Just kind of shows you, you know, the different flexibility you would want to do. And then after that, it's literally about three lines of PowerShell for people who are familiar with Operations Manager. I import the Operations Manager module, and then I just go use SCOM Management Group Connection, connect to the Operations Manager group, and then call install agent. And what this does is it installs the agent into that VM that was created. And so the really nice thing about this is now you've actually brought that VM under management. Mm-hmm. So that is kind of the critical thing you really need to do as an organization a lot of times, is because you are responsible. You know, a lot of ways, what is running inside that VM, and you need to enforce your policies.
Keep it healthy, keep it available.
Exactly. You know, something goes wrong, and then they're like, where's my backup? This was critical information. You know, all of that needs to be enforced, and this gives you that ability to do that as you need to.
Nice.
Yeah, so that will just go ahead and run. And, you know, after about 15, 20 minutes when the VM, it'll actually be connected to your right network, have the agent installed, and fully managed by the end user.
Well, that was a great demo. Any more visualization you want to show in the demo?
Yeah, the only other thing I would kind of show you, you know, besides the dashboard, which gives you that nice overview, these are the assets. So this is the overview of the job running. But if you want to actually import those modules, you know, mm-hmm. we talked earlier about integration packs and Orchestrator, and what's the equivalent inside of SMA. And so inside of here, you can actually import modules directly into the system. And once you import in the system, they'll get distributed out to your runbook workers. And so we have these runbook workers that are highly available. So you can put, you know, lots of them, one or two, or up to as many as you need. And the good thing is, because if one fails, the other ones can pick up the work. And because we're backed by SQL Server, it's a really highly available distributed environment, where if you try to do it in PowerShell or PowerShell workflow, it'd be very, very difficult to do that. So you can import the modules. And then the last thing I'll touch on is the settings. So the other key thing we learned from Orchestrator when customers were using it that we wanted to apply to SMA was, you know, the biggest challenge is, where are my credentials?
Right.
You know, I don't want to put my credentials in the script. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to keep typing them in every time because then it's not really automation. You know, how can you securely store my credentials? So the one thing we added was having the ability to store your credentials directly inside of SMA. And then inside your runbooks, you can just retrieve those back as you need to. So they're centrally stored, secure, but nobody else can get access to them. But then your runbooks can just retrieve them as they need.
Nice.
And that's for certificates or for PowerShell credentials. And you can just store them directly inside of there. And then there's a whole set of other ones around. You want to create a schedule, a variable, a connection. All of these kind of what we're calling assets enable you to take the domain data, the hard-coded stuff you might have inside your PowerShell scripts, move that into a central location. And then once your runbooks, you know, if your credentials change or, you know, the variable changes, you just change it in one place and your scripts just continue working. And so one of the things we wanted to do was take all the domain data out of the scripts and move it into kind of a centralized system inside of SMA.
Nice. Well, this was a great overview, really showing us how we can do this automation, but automation at scale as well, right? You got the distributed systems, highly available,
yes.
flexible with PowerShell. Integrates with Orchestrator so you don't throw out these existing investments.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we did a lot of testing to get our make sure the performance of what customers expect. So, you know, there's oftentimes with these customers we have, there'd be, you know, tens, 100,000, you know, jobs running a month. And so that's the kind of automation they're trying to do throughout their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to enable that. And so we really built a robust system that can kind of meet those really high-end customers, as well as the ones who just want to automate their day-to-day tasks inside of the data center.
Well, that was a great overview, and I'm sure there's a lot more questions. So where could people go to learn more?
Yeah, so there's a few places we have information. So obviously up on the TechNet, there's a whole description of service management automation. But we do have a blog on the Orchestrator blog, where about once a week, we're kind of highlighting additional work we've done, features, give customers more information. And then also the Building Clouds blog has a lot of information on the Windows Azure pack, including automation as part of that. And then if customers have questions, we have the forums that they can go to the forums, ask questions, and we're monitoring those and trying to get feedback from customers so we can make it better.
Great, so that's actually a place where they can even give you guys feedback as well.
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's the place to go because, you know, you get the community looking at the questions, mm-hmm. answering them, but also members of the product team are there looking at them, trying to figure out as we go forward, you know, what are the additional things customers would like inside of automation.
Very nice. Well, Eamon, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for giving us an overview of SMA. And everybody, go try it out. It's a pretty cool technology here.
Awesome, Simon. Thank you.
Thanks. Welcome back. Hopefully you learned some interesting things about service management automation, and you guys are going to start trying that out yourself with the Windows Azure Pack. But in any case, we want to get your feedback. We want to hear what you guys want for our next show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hated. Even if it's our awesome jokes, that's okay. You can tell us that too. Now, when you want to interact with us, you could post comments at the bottom of this page or tweet with us at TN Edge.
You can hit us up on our Facebook page, Channel 9 Edge, and you could email us, edge@microsoft.com. We'd love to hear about things you'd like to see on the show, maybe a particular product area that you've heard about, you'd like to know more. If it's in that general IT pro arena, we would be, you know, happy to hear your ideas. And specific comments to the technical part of Simon's interview, make sure you just comment down below so we can have everybody benefit from the dialogue that goes on about this cool SMA stuff.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, David. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.